This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Ugh, you said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. Listed in minutes, with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope. But I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Michigan Wild Podcast.
We're just here walking around. We're going to go set a tree stand. Don't worry, my dad's weird. He never shot a huge buck before.
I just shot a freaking big buck.
Get that one. Oh, you hit him. Go get that one, Henry. Right here. Boom!
Size of that deer.
What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Michigan Wild. I am still on cloud nine after shooting my buck October 22nd, and I haven't hunted again since. This is, you know, less than a week later, but doing this intro for this podcast because this is one that was recorded a few weeks before you're going to listen to this. You know, we're right in the thick of approaching in November rapidly in the end of October. So a lot of guys are starting to get out of town and take their hunting trips and their rutcations and all those things. That includes the people of Sportsman's Empire. You know, guys got trips planned. So we kind of had to bank up some episodes to have some stuff launch while we were all gone doing, you know, chasing our passions and our hobbies. And I think I got a couple podcasts banked up. I don't know if I have enough. I think I might be one short, but instead of, you know, dragging on the last 7 days, week three, I decided to have that get launched the same week that Find It Fred did, just to give, you know, updated info as quick as possible. But you will hear my, my redemption podcast that you guys hopefully already listened to that. That podcast is all about the buck I shot. So hopefully you guys enjoyed that and learned a lot of things. That's what I like to strive to do for people, is just kind of tell the story as much as I can, as well as I can, to hopefully help people learn. That's how I feel like I've learned, you know, over the years, hearing other people's success stories and, you know, the non-successful ones. And maybe you have a property that's similar, or you can look at properties you can hunt differently, and they can give you an opportunity to, you know, capitalize on the things that you do know. So this podcast is one with Corey Tart. He's a guy that I went to high school with. He was a grade or two older than me. We were not friends by any means. We just would, every time we'd run into each other, we always had good conversation. And I think he knew I loved hunting and fishing and being outside, and I knew he did too. So we were just very similar minded in that. And then we, you know, when you're kids, there's a lot going on, sports and stuff like that. But he was always that guy. I was like, man, he likes to be outside doing stuff. Like, if we spent more time with each other, it wouldn't be a bad thing. But it just never happened. But, you know, fast forward all these years, you know, following him through social media, and I'm running into him occasionally in town when he's in town, you know, just seeing what he's done with his life and his career. It's quite the cool thing. I mean, he started kind of, you know, raising dogs and training dogs and doing those kind of things for like upland and waterfowl hunting. He's got a company that does that. And then he also has a lodge, Grand Celio, I think is how you say it, lodge. It's out in South Dakota. And I mean, he offers a lot of cool things. He's got a lodge that people can stay at, and he's got other property where you can do the more of an adventure hunt with a canvas tent. And not only does he do upland bird, I don't know if he does much waterfowl, but he does like the pheasant thing, the sharp-tail grouse. I mean, he does that. He also has the whitetail and mule deer hunts. So this is the perfect time of year for you guys to listen to this, because if you're like, man, I would love to go out west or do kind of a hunt, I mean, the Dakotas are just a wonderful place to do that, and some really good opportunities for, you know, whitetails and mule deer. And even like a pheasant hunt, like I've been to North Dakota twice, and that hunt was always end of October going into November. So I've given up some of my bow season to just go and experience the prairie, take a dog and chase pheasants. I mean, to me, hunting's, no matter how you shake it down, if you find a passion, if that's small game, like my buddy Tyler, he loves doing that. You know, that's his big commitment. Or, you know, other guys that like, you know, chasing stuff with their hounds, like Tony Hill. I mean, you just got to find something you like. And if you can bring someone, me and my cousin went one year out there doing that. I mean, it's just some great memories and just some good, clean fun. And, you know, in the world of today, you know, we have a lot of social media, so you have quite the reach. But, you know, the vet process for an outfitter doing that kind of thing, they're not all created equal, unfortunately. But Corey's a guy that you can just tell, hopefully listen to him talk, he's tore up with this, and he loves seeing his dogs work. He loves seeing his clients being happy and doing those kind of things. So if it's something you've ever really wanted to get into, and, you know, don't be afraid to reach out to him and, you know, let him know that you heard the podcast and you want to give him opportunity for some business and go have a fun time. I mean, not gonna lie, that canvas tent kind of hunt he offers is something me and my wife have been thinking about even before I did the podcast with him. I mean, I've reached out to him before, so I think that's in my near future, hopefully next year. But I'm totally down with supporting someone I know and can relate to. So yeah, hopefully you guys enjoy this episode. Like I said, I might not have enough. I'm not sure exactly how many weeks ahead I needed to be, but this should drop at some point in time. And then, yeah, definitely going to be recording some podcasts for, you know, gun camp, because November 15th is coming quick too. Have some updates from Illinois. Hopefully we got a couple bucks in the ground by the time this podcast drops. So, hey, I appreciate all the support, guys. Hopefully you liked like what you've been hearing the last few weeks. It's been quite a fun ride through this fall so far with hunting and doing these podcasts, and I love it. And hopefully you guys do too. Enjoy the episode. Thank you. we're somewhere in the teens of hours apart. But yeah, welcome Corey Tart. How's it going, man?
It's going good. How you been?
Good, dude. Like we kind of touched base a little earlier. It's been hectic the last couple of years. I know we've just known each other for a while, but we haven't really spent any of our adult life hanging out at all. It was all back when we were teenagers, kind of a thing. But I've been busy and it's been good. Construction game's booming and it's October, so I'm happy. So it's a good time of year for me.
Yeah, I mean, kind of grew up together a little bit, same school, obviously, same town, but went our separate ways. But I think, even just catching up here a little bit before this started, having, the common ground of the outdoors, it just brings you right back. I mean, that's the cool Absolutely. Thing about the outdoors for everybody, and especially what I do now is there's always some way to find that common ground between who you're in the field with. So.
Yeah, and you just make me jealous on social media. You know what I mean? Yeah, doing this, what you do for your job with dogs and working at a lodge and all that. Like, you're kind of doing something that I think a lot of guys, when you look from where we live, you're out west. I mean, you're in South Dakota, correct? So, I mean, you're out west kind of living that life. And I've been out there a couple times and it's like, man, dude, that's so cool that you get to do that. So why don't you kind of like tell us a little bit about you and your upbringing hunting and like how you got to be where you are right now?
Yeah, so, man, kind of long story. I don't know if we have enough time for that, but...
bullet points, man, bullet points. You got
it. Yeah, so, I mean, I grew up in the outdoors just like everybody. I mean, my grandpa, my dad taking me out all the time. Squirrel hunting is what I started out doing as soon as I could safely hold a pellet gun, you know what I mean? And then, that turned into bunny hunting with my dad and his beagles to turned into bird hunting with my grandpa and his pointers to deer hunting. And then fast forward to like high school and everyone grilling you about what you want to do for a living and not really having any idea. I literally sent out some emails to go guide for some people. I had trained, kind of got help training some pointers when I was younger. I had a couple dogs and wanted to go help train and learn how to do it, guide, and moved to Georgia when I was 23.
Yeah, let's say you're young, had early some odd 20s.
And edge. Yeah, I had some odd and end jobs, obviously, out of high school and everything, sold everything, sold my truck, sold everything, basically, besides guns, and packed up, moved to Georgia. I lived in a guy's garage for a year for free. And they took me in. I stayed there for 3 years. And then they had an opportunity in upstate New York to run an outfitter and a dog kennel there, where I kind of went more the dog training route versus hunting and guiding. We still did a little bit of it, but it was all about field trials and hunt tests. And we did that for 3 years and then started our own company, the Dog Park, which was formerly known as Great Lakes Retrievers. And then got an opportunity in South Dakota to come out and guide. It was just for to help out a buddy who used to guide at a lodge. He was having some surgery and I helped out. And then it turned into what we have now, where we took over management, we moved out here, and now we have ownership. And yeah,
that's so awesome. And how long have you been doing that, where you're at right now?
5 years. This is the fifth year I've been in South Dakota. Yep.
So cool. So do you still do like the dog training and stuff like that? Like what encompasses your like year, I guess?
Yeah. So we'll start off around April. I get all our dogs in for training. When I was in Michigan, we had like it was like almost 40 dogs, 30 to 40 dogs. And that was field trials every weekend, trying to stay, kind of top of the game. When I moved out here and took over the outfitting part of it, we downsized the kennel, obviously, but we get all our dogs in around April. We start training. We designed dog training ponds, and we have all the cover in the world for upland. And, so we do that throughout the summer and early fall. And then comes hunting season. So part of the training season is done with we do a lot of farming as far as like cover and food plots, not your typical farming. We're not doing like ag or anything like that, but a lot of property restoration, property management, for birds and deer and everything we can do. And then we jump into right into our hunting season and lodge season there. So
very nice. And like you do, like when you're talking about like your hunting season, that's upland bird, that's waterfowl, that's whitetail, mule deer too, right?
Yeah. So we don't do a lot of waterfowl. That's okay. As far as guiding is concerned, that's all personal.
Okay.
But we do upland, prairie chicken. Hold on 1 second.
Dude, prairie chicken. Yeah. I've shot a couple of those. That was my first experience in North Dakota. I got to shoot a prairie chicken and I got one mounted on the wall here by me. Those are fun to shoot.
Yeah. So we have about 800 acres here on East River, South Dakota. I don't know if anyone recognizes how South Dakota is kind of split up. It's split up by the Missouri River there. Mm-hmm. They break up the entire state, licensing everything, East River, okay. West River. So where our lodge is, we have about 800 acres. Then we lease another 700 for upland and whitetail. And then West River over by Rapid City, I lease 13,000 acres for whitetail, sharpies, grouse, and mule deer. So
that's awesome.
We kind of span the whole state a little bit. It gets a little crazy during hunting season between our West River. I call it West River Camp. It's a wall tent setup. People fly into Rapid City. They come stay in a wall tent. We bird hunt. We deer hunt. Yeah. You know, it's kind of the whole gig. And then when you come over East River at our lodge, we've got a 12-bedroom lodge. We just put a new addition on this year for big great room and everything. And do a lot of our pheasant hunting and whitetail out of here.
That's so cool. I mean, that's what I like about going, like when I went to North Dakota the first couple times, I liked it so much because it was so different, but there was like so much space, you know, like to do things. And like, you know, we're shooting pheasants, we're shooting prairie chickens, we're shooting Hungarian partridge. And then everywhere you went, there's whitetail, like, you know, running around. I saw some just giant bucks, like the biggest probably score non-typical buck I've ever seen was in North Dakota. And he popped out of a sunflower field, you know, and you like, it's in the middle of nowhere. And this just giant deer is there. So it's like that, the plains kind of, you know, like the river bottom area. It's just so unique and so cool being from Michigan to go there. And like, Michigan's a lot of cool areas in Michigan, but you don't quite get that vast feel in Michigan, you know?
Yeah. It's a different feel. It's hard to get used to. Bird hunting kind of falls into place with dogs and everything that I do professionally with the dogs before we came out here. But as far as deer hunting, it was a little bit of an adjustment. I mean, you know, we're not taking, I mean, we have a rifle area, a rifle zone in Michigan, but, you know, you could probably do most of it with a shotgun.
Absolutely.
You get out here and you can see 15 miles, and like you said, I mean, you see some of the biggest deer you've ever seen. I think personally, and I, you know, you call it bias if you want, but South Dakota, North Dakota, huge sleeper states for big whitetail, obviously big mule deer. That's well known. But as far as whitetail are concerned, I mean, you can't drive around for 3 days and not see the biggest deer you've seen if you're coming from the East Coast. And it's constant. They're all over the place out here. So the genetics are good. Obviously there's a lot of food. And then you get more West River type and it comes into like the river breaks and creek bottoms and all the southern river shoots that come off of the Missouri, like the Cheyenne and any of the creeks that feed out of the mountains. I mean, all that terrain change out there it's unreal to be able to hunt it. And it's different. I mean, it's not your not typical easy. Stand yeah, it's not hunting, easy.
Correct.
Blind hunting. It's everything we do out here is spot and stalk. And it is.
That's so
it's,
cool.
It's hard to do. It's not impossible 100%. It's hard to do, but it is, I wouldn't go back to it. If you paid me to, I don't mind sitting in a stand. I don't mind sitting in a blind, but being able to spot and stalk a whitetail, which I thought was impossible. I could barely move in a tree stand when I was a kid without them seeing me. To be able to spot and stalk them on the prairie, unreal.
So cool.
There's no adrenaline rush like it.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I've shot some deer on the ground in Michigan, in Illinois. We've had a property we hunted a couple times, and I did try sneaking up on some deer, a grassy, field. And I actually passed a buck at 18 yards, and there was a doe that had, we got worked through by another deer. So I just kind of moved up and I caught this buck working, through this grass. And I was this is some tree, mixed in. So it was optimal for me to be on the ground and make a move. So I saw him probably 150 yards away, and I'm I bet he's going to go right where those other deer went. So I made a 30, 40 yard move, and that buck came by 18 yards, tongue hanging out, breath is just, you felt that 18 yards felt 8 feet, cause you're just not used to it. I should have shot the deer cause it'd been so cool, but he was probably only 115 inch deer, but still it was just a cool experience. And I can't imagine waking up, for multiple days in a row, being able to have opportunities like that. And granted, like you said, it's not a guarantee. It's really hard, but all day you're peaked. You're constantly especially when you're I'm going after that deer, you have that adrenaline pumping for much longer than tree stands, a lot of waiting, and you try to keep yourself up, and be ready for the moment, but it could be there and gone in 30 seconds, So
yeah,
that's a cool thing. But I want to kind of dig into the bird aspect of it. What is your favorite kind of dog to pheasant hunt and do stuff there? Do you kind of have a set what you like to do, or you like to do for the clients, or what kind of, how do you kind of attack that for pheasant hunting or upland bird hunting?
I mean, my favorite dog to hunt over is an English pointer. I grew up with German short hair pointers, but the English pointer for me, as far as guiding, if there were 8 days in a week, they'd sign up for nine. They go all day. They don't quit. I can finish an entire guide season here in South Dakota and head down to Georgia and guide quail and then jump to Texas, and they're just as fresh as they were day one. It's unreal. But a lot of our stuff kind of depends on the bird too. So pheasant hunting, you can do a lot of pointer stuff. If we're at our lodge and we've got a corporate group or something like that, we're going to have, typically we're going to use labs, which is a flushing situation. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of controlled chaos. The dogs are within gun range. You don't really know when a bird's going to get up unless you're watching the dogs constantly and you kind of know what's going on, but then you're just surprised with birds, identify, take a safe shot. And then you get to see the dog work after that as well with retrieving and possibly handling and things like that. Smaller groups, five and less, I like to break out the pointers. It's a little easier to get limits. When you got five or less to do with the pointer, if you got 10 guys, 12 guys in the field to do it, one bird at a time that'd be a long 2 weeks, and one's staying here for 2 weeks straight. So
for sure. Yeah.
You got to break out the pointers. But
the times I've been out there, we've went as a pretty, decent group, four or five of us. And we've had pointers typically, but I brought my lab the 1 year because my pointer at passing. I had a white German short hair pointer. And it's super cool because, all right, he's covering a bunch more ground than the lab does. Box on point, you got to hustle over there. And then it flushes a bird, but there's a good chance it's a hen, so you can't even shoot it. So then you got to restart that whole endeavor again. Then we took our lab out there. We were hammering these sloughs, and the labs are not as finesse, they're more blow through this area.
Chaos, man.
Yes, like you said, perfect. And you're just me and my cousin, we're kind of partnered up, and we're all right, man, send them in there, and you're just waiting, and you're walking. Like you said, it's like rabbit hunting with birds, all of a sudden, boom, there goes one, And we did have a lot more opportunities that way. Granted, they weren't as good of an opportunity because when you walk up to a pointer, you kind of feel a little more confident. You can kind of prepare yourself, but it's a lot of fun when they're, it's a lot of fun both ways. So I think that's kind of cool that you do that, have that technique. So now when you transition to when is there time for you to get out and do this kind of stuff? Because you always hear guiding's it's awesome. And you kind of hunt through your clients and do that kind of stuff. Do you get opportunities yourself to still get out there with a gun in your hands and, enjoy it, or how does that work?
If my clients are missing quite a bit, I'll break out the 28 gauge and, knock a few down for them. Show how it's done. No,
yep, there you go. 28 gauge, loaded, super light, BBs,
Yeah, we're talking skeet shot, improved cylinder. Yeah, I mean, just to show them how it's done.
Yep.
No. it's a we started off this talking about, you know, kind of like there's envy and watching guides and possibly dog trainers out there and stuff like that, upland or big game, whichever one it is, but it's a grind. My favorite time of year is the time of year that I'm the busiest, and I never thought that was going to be that way growing up, but you know, I know people I grew up with, you're one of them, probably better outdoorsman than I am, but you know, there's no hacks on my side or your side or anyone else's side that we grew up with, but some people have to pull the trigger and some people don't. I enjoy every bit of the hunt, and as far as the bird side of it comes, being able to watch the dogs is really the only thing that I care about. Watching the dogs, that's why I've been training for 12 years now professionally. That's the only job I've had. It's not a side job. And then the outfitting business as well now, but to be able to watch the dogs, it's kind of taken place of the field trials that I used to do, spend so much time training these dogs, then going out and competing. Now I get to spend all this time and still showcase them to people, but through a hunting situation that they get to take a memory home with. So I get to hunt, you know, every once in a while. I'll go scout in between trips, especially West River when it comes to like Sharpies and Prairie Chicken. When I go down for quail down south, I'll go get the dogs used to the heat, things like that. And we'll take a couple days. And obviously, I still want to have, you know, the dog success as well. So we'll shoot a couple. I do have a trip in the works here coming up. Hopefully, it'll be about a 5-year. It's only going to be a couple weeks at a time, but I want to complete the Upland Slam. So, but I want to do that with all my dogs. So we're going to try to accomplish that here in the next couple of years.
Sweet.
And, try to document it as much as we possibly can. And, deer hunting is kind of few and far between. I get a couple times a year to be able to do things. My biggest thing is, spring bear. I like going in the mountains, and that's my slow time. So
yep.
Go stay in for, you know, 10 to 14 days and try to kill a spring bear in the mountains,
that's
either
cool.
Montana or Idaho or something like that. But I got the opportunity to take my dad out. You know, he's the one that got me into the outdoors. He came for the first week of archery this year for spot and stalk. It's an either or for archery in South Dakota, so either mule deer or whitetail. And he got to kill a really old, cool 8-point full velvet first one. I got to guide him, but it was Sweet. Still kind of a father-son hunt.
That's so cool.
Kind of, dream hunt for me. So that was really cool. So there's a lot of benefits to it, obviously, but yeah, as far as time being able to get out just strictly by myself, it's not I guess we just kind of look at it a little differently. Time in the woods is time in the woods for me. So,
and I think that like my first like real guided experience was in Wyoming on spring bear this year. Me and Ashley went and did that, had a guy full guided hunt, and talking with them guys and spending, you know, a week in the mountains with them, I like, it was very apparent that to do that for a job, you get the fulfillment and like exactly how you were saying, you know, like them dudes loved it. Like,
yeah.
And the whole time I'm just there, like walking around, smiling on my face, like just happy to be there and do that. You know, this is the coolest experience. And my wife was joking with me. She's like, I literally felt like super sad that the reason that you weren't able to be a guide is because you married me, you know? And I was like, hey, come on, you can't do that. You know, I'm like, I'm a dude that loves the outdoors. And of course I'm going to be like that, 'cause I'm there 1 week, you know, it's not like it's got an opportunity to be like, you know, talking to them, they're, you know, they still love it, but they're like, we don't even really, it's hard to appreciate the mountains when we see them every day, the same as like you guys do. So every time we take clients or you guys fly in from the, you know, the east side of the country and you see these mountains, just seeing how much you guys love it, like refreshes us and like keeps it, you know, keeps it really exciting for us. We love to do it. But, and then, you know, you're touching base on like how dogs work. Like, you know, I have beagles I've had for quite a few years and like did a lot of rabbit hunting. So I have two beagles and I've had like a German Shorthair pointer and I've had a lab, and now I have like one of those, Frank, he's a wired hair pointing Griffon. So, you know, he's a working dog, and like, it's really hard to, I almost feel like bad because I can't take him out as much. Like if I lived out West, you know, you can do a lot more opportunities with him, but it's like hard to explain to people that aren't used to seeing like hunting dogs how like much fulfillment you get out of watching them do what they're made to do. And it's really tough to explain, but if you just take someone one time, I think the light bulb just goes off for people. And that's why I went to North Dakota 2 years, and when we get to go there, you know, you're kind of touching base on before we started recording, but it's like the third weekend in October, like you're saying. So we would always like be there like October 30th, 31st, somewhere in there. And then we'd stay there for like 8 days. So like I was missing out. I was not bow hunting whitetails the first few days of November. And I was okay with it because watching dogs work and doing that out there was that fulfilling for me. And I loved it. Like it was like, I wasn't even that sad that I wasn't home bow hunting because it's just such a great experience. So anyone who's kind of, you know, listening to this, like I wanted to do this podcast, even right now, and though it's not going to be like a whitetail focused podcast, but there's opportunities for guys to get out there and just enjoy something different. And, you know, yeah, maybe you're missing a couple good days of hunting possibly, but when you go out and experience like the prairie and watch dogs work, it's all day fun. Like it's, you know, we walked miles, like we're driving all over. We're like, we were doing the whole plot program thing. You know, you're just bombing to this part of the state and you're staying in these little motels. And it was just a great time. So that's why I kind of want to do that, because like, that's an opportunity for you to get out there. Like you can take like a cousin who I've never hunted with before. We got to go do that. You're going with people that you've never been before. It's lackadaisical to an extent. I mean, you're determined, but you're just out there just seeing country. You walk over this like small little hillside, get up on top of it, and it is like the most pretty view. But I can't even explain. You just look, like you said, you can see 15 miles. There's not a light. There's not a building. It's just wide open, you know. And then there's snow geese flying. There's, you know, ducks in spots. There's, you hear pheasants, you know, sounding off or whatever they do when they're out. Dude, it's just an experience that if you haven't done it, you know, it's awesome.
Whenever I get a free time from guiding, you know, an off day from bird hunting or something like that, you know, running the dogs, even when I'm guiding, but running the dogs and kind of taking them into a spot that may not have a whole bunch of birds, but being able to look at that property differently just because I'm running the dogs, but I'm also looking for deer and possible sheds or anything like that. I mean, bird hunting for me has always been, I've killed some of my biggest deer because I've scouted an area while bird hunting and then returned to that area later to try to capitalize on either, you know, a scrape or a shed I've found or something like that, knowing that, hey, you know, this is probably his bedroom, this is probably his travel corridor to food, to water, everything like that. And to be able to look at the land differently like that, but you're doing it in such a, you know, you're not just out there scouting for, you're hunting and enjoying other parts of, and you can do that squirrel hunting and stuff. I mean, I grew up doing that with just squirrel hunting and bunny hunting as well.
You're taking it all in. You're like, you're being an outdoorsman, which, you know, you hear a lot of people talk about this woodmanship thing that's kind of lost nowadays, but I think all it really is just like getting out there, enjoying, you know, being outside, but just like taking in your surroundings and learning how all animals use different properties. And like, if you learn what kind of like terrain, like rabbits like to run in, or like when you flush a rabbit and how it, like the dogs circle it, it's like, okay, they really like, you know, hanging out in this kind of a cover. And so you're walking properties and you like me and Tyler Thompson, you know, we've gotten to the point where we like can drive by a property from the road and we have a really good inclination if that's going to be a good deer hunt spot or a good rabbit hunt spot. You know, just because you learn those things, and then you can check stuff when you know, take on like a big chunk of state land. We're going through and looking at the map, and we're like just checking off spots. And it's like, as a rabbit hunter, we're like, all right, good rabbit spot, terrible deer spot, good deer spot, terrible rabbit spot. You know, like you can just go through and you just become a really well-rounded outdoorsman. And then all these, you know, you just get to enjoy it. And I think that's, at the end of the day, no one's going to care how many mounts I have on the wall. You know what I mean? No one's going to really care how many stuff I've shot. It's all personal thing for me. Like that's what I enjoy out of life. And I think if you can take advantage of those opportunities, that's pretty cool. But on the flip side, you know, when we're, you know, looking at you from a distance, you know, it's like, man, Corey's living this life where he's guiding and out there doing that. But like, you don't see on social media, you don't see all the work that goes into what you do. Like I've, like Tony Hill, you know, he's got like, he started getting these bigger dogs. So he's like trying to do the bear dog thing and chasing coyotes and doing all these things. And like, I see what he goes through like in a summer, just trying to train his dogs. He's got to drive hours to find it. And, you know, do the, all when you just see a picture of a deer or of a bear in a tree with his dogs going crazy, you're like, man, that's so cool. But like, you have no idea the backstory to that. And like, you're doing this as a full-time gig. Like, there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of work. There's a lot of like behind the scenes stuff that like, you just can't appreciate until you actually like live it, I guess.
Right. I mean, I'm not better than anybody else. It's just hard work and how much I want to be here. I mean, it's to be able to not really know what I wanted to do coming out of high school besides, you know, mess around and hunt. I mean, I wanted to hunt and fish. That's all I wanted to do. And how can you do that? Well, just being able to do that probably wasn't going to happen. So I kind of found the next best thing for me and it worked out. But yeah, I mean, the hard work, I mean, we talked about it at the beginning. I literally just packed up, said, see you later. I'm taking it off on a chance. And, you know, lived in someone's garage for a year. Yeah, it was a well-known outfitter. It's not like I just like pick some Southern country guy and did it. But, you know, it was kind of the deal. Like, you know, you can live here for free. It's basically, you know, a twin bed in his garage. And, you know, that's what it was, but I wanted it so bad. And, you know, I pursued it. So, but yeah, every day to get better, every year, get better. I have my clients stop messing with the dang lights around here.
Hey, you're fine. Keeps it entertaining for me. I got a little light shoot going on.
I think they lost some lights here. We put in our new addition and give me a second. I apologize.
No, so you need me to come over there and do some construction work for you, is what you're saying.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, my building blew down once, yeah. Just to let you know about that.
Oh geez.
Yeah, that was fun.
Nice.
Nice. Yeah, we put in our addition out and it blew down once and then
Well, it gets windy out there in the prairie.
Yeah. You know,
that's no joke. Here. Dude, I remember when I was in North Dakota, we had like the first few days we were like hunting in t-shirts, you know, it's nice, getting sunburned, and like wake up the next morning, there's like snow on the ground, trucks are ice shut. And it was like the most miserable I've been ever hunting. Because you're like, you're here, you might as well hunt. And it's like drizzling, sleeting, windy, and you're just frozen solid. I was like, what? Literally less than 24 hours ago, I was like getting sunburned. What is this?
We just had it for a youth hunt out here. So the youth season starts, and then the resident season starts, and then the non-resident. So we had a youth hunt, and it was full of mentored hunters, which are... so in South Dakota, you can do a mentorship. So I like mentor my child. When I'm in the field, if I feel that they're safe and they can hunt, I just can't carry a gun. So we had a whole bunch of those. We've been doing those for the last 4 years out here. It's turned into a huge group. It's one of my favorite hunts of the year. When we did that, you know, early October, you know, South Dakota is a little different, but early October is usually pretty nice. And it was like 38 and downpouring for the first 2 days.
Oh man. And it was, that's the worst.
Okay. So now we're trying to balance, like, we want the kids to get out and shoot. We want them to hunt, but at the same time, I don't want it to be a miserable experience either. So we're picking our, you know, our turns to come in to get warmed up and, you know, have hot cocoa and then go back out and it's, you know, raining, sleeting. It was a big to do for a three day hunt. The last day we tried to make the most of it, get out early and knock some birds down and have the best time as possible. But yeah, it was, the weather always plays some sort of trick in there, but,
Mother Nature is your worst enemy. And, you know, also your blessing, you know, like how that works. Like you can have just an amazing fall because of it and you could have just adversity every day. So,
yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool. You get to do that. And, you know, I like think back to like all the times that if I look back, some of my like core memories of like being in the outdoors, you know, ice fishing, maybe with a grappa or, you know, chasing deer with, you know, my dad or whatever it may be. I remember just some days you're just miserable, you know, but then that might be a day someone shot something and it sticks in my brain. Like, hey, we toughed it out. You know, like you did something, you feel like an adult because you were able to like overcome some of this adversity. And I think it kind of like, and maybe some kids, you know, will
you know, live that life, and they might not, you know, want to continue. But I know for me, it just made me want it that much more, and it kind of helped mature me as a hunter and outdoorsman. So pretty cool experience. Yeah. To get to do that every year, and you know, kind of, you know, you don't know, you might be in, you know, inflicting like generational, you know, change in families, like helping them get into it, and their kids will get to it, and like you're doing your part, which is pretty cool to be in that position of to have that opportunity.
Yeah, I mean, getting people in the outdoors for all of us as outdoorsmen, not just guides, but anybody who enjoys the outdoors, whether it's fishing, hunting, you know, even hiking and camping, everything like that. It's, you know, it's about being out there, and there's a peace that comes with being out there. I think that you can probably speak to, obviously, as well. You know, when I go for spring bear, I'm not guiding, so I don't, you know, my job is I stress myself out. It's not a stressful job, but I stress myself out trying to make sure everyone's having a good time. And obviously successful at the same time. Safety, you know, we're dealing with rattlesnakes, which I didn't grow up with. So that learning that whole thing is all over the place. Dogs getting bit, trying to figure out how to do that.
Oh, gosh.
But like, you know, there's a peace, whether you don't have to hunt or fish, to get out in the wilderness and find the peace out there. And to reset. And if you can even give just an ounce of that, whether they continue to hunt like they do with us here for generations or not, it's a pleasure to be able to just hope to instill a little bit of wanting to get back out there. You know what I mean?
What I get for using a computer from, like, dude, it might be 2014. I bought this MacBook Air for my wife way back when she worked at a job. And was like, yeah, we'll buy it for you. And it's been a good computer for her. She got through her BSN program. And then when she started her master's, we needed like a little bit more reliable computer because she was having the same issue I just had. It just randomly freeze and turn off. So I like took this computer over and have used it for work the last few years. And now it actually works pretty good for podcast if it wouldn't freeze on this Google Meet thing. But it has two USB ports still, so I can connect two mics to it. And this mic I'm using, if I have someone come in, so I'm like, dude, if I don't spend any more money on this, if I have to, I'm rocking it, and I kind of know how to use it a little bit. So we're just using it.
But yeah,
thankfully, what we did do before this recorded, and I got a notification that it was processing, so we didn't lose it, which is good. But I kind of wanted, like, we'll kind of use it as a transition, kind of go more into like your whitetail hunts. Like, you kind of touch base on how you have early season, you know, velvet hunts, you know, which is like a spot and stalk thing. Which I almost, if I wasn't already went to Wyoming this year and have Illinois lease and an Iowa hunt, I was totally wanting to go with me and Ashley, like really wanted to go this year, but it was just like, maybe we should, you know, maybe do a different year because we already got everything else going on. But now I kind of want to roll into like, I'm assuming you have some rut hunts that you do or like during the rut time, cause you know, the gun season, stuff like that. So maybe if you want to kind of like, cause you have like a different experience, like you're seeing these deer rut from a distance and like over, you know, you can kind of get eyes on them. Maybe if that is the case, you know, a lot of spot and stalk stuff. I know there's some like bottoms and things like that they can hide in, but maybe if you want to kind of bring us into like when you kind of start doing some of your whitetail hunts during the rut, if that be gun hunting primarily, or if that's bow hunting, want to kind of like touch base with like kind of how you do that.
Yeah. For us out here, well, to go into the rut, kind of to compare the rut for Michigan to South Dakota is just it's a learning experience. And I don't mean that like you're far behind if you're from Michigan and then come to South Dakota and you just don't understand it. It's the fact that you can watch it from afar has given me so many tools to learn versus, you know, the quick bursts of a buck chasing a doe in a field or a buck chasing a doe in a bottom and in a timber area or something like that in Michigan. I mean, I can watch the whole sequence, everything. I mean, for hours, it's unreal. I get to watch the big buck chase a doe. And then I get to watch from, you know, 800 yards away, two doe or two little bucks trail that doe that buck just pushed an hour beforehand. And then that those two bucks get too close and that buck comes up and runs them off. And then he goes back to his, I mean, I get to watch the whole process out here. So, it's a learning experience, meaning that you get to learn so much about whitetail by watching that happen out here because you can see forever. Most of our rut actually happens. I mean, I see a lot of things happen, obviously early. You're going to see your young bucks always try to chase early. That would be kind of no different than seeing, you know, a young dog versus an old dog, chase a female. They're going to start fairly early. They don't know really what's going on. But that first in November has been special for me with, you know, and I'm not saying I haven't killed a giant, but, you know, 140s, I've got a mid 150, that we've put on the ground, a 162, all happen archery that first week or that first week and a half in November, where they just hit the ground running and get after it. And that's just, doing it in Michigan, you know, and maybe I was taught wrong, but the rut happens and it's always like right next to gun season. And that's when the rut is. And then you start watching it as you grow up, obviously, and you kind of learn that it kind of changes a little bit and there's different things that can set it off and the patterns and, you know, your cold fronts and everything like that can set everything off. But out here, it definitely happens, I think, earlier, more consistently here in South Dakota. But yeah, I mean, it's a lot of spot and stalk. It's a lot of sit and watch and wait. If he's got a doe and he takes her back somewhere and beds her down for a couple of days and tries to figure out how to keep his bucks away, how to play that scenario. We've done it with decoys. You know, you're sitting 300-500 yards away, watch them put a doe away, watch a little buck come up, and all he does is pick his doe up and take off. And you know that's not a time to run a decoy. And then there's other times where, you know, a spike comes up and he goes and runs after it. And it's like, okay, well, let's try the decoy. And he comes, I mean, he'll come right at you. And that makes that's it so as cool. easy as possible. Crazy adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
But as easy as possible, if you can pull off the right alignment and you're not outside your decoy and everything like that. But being able to watch all that, that's the thing, is like, when do you do this and how do you do this? We get to actually watch it and play the whole game out in a scenario. So when you're spotting and stalking hunting in South Dakota, but like even more specific to the rut, a hunt isn't your typical hunt in Michigan, right? You usually have like, you have a morning hunt and an evening hunt, and that's kind of your day. Like a hunt is you've located a deer, and now you're going to dedicate that day and possibly another day and another day, depending on what it is, to get it done. Whether you're doing it for private or personal use on private land or public land, or if it's, you know, me guiding or whatever it is, it's a chess match that I'm hyper competitive. I always have been as a kid, and now I get to go up against
a
whitetail and try to make
this
all
competitive.
Man.
Yeah. Come on.
So to be able to go up against a whitetail and walk up within 60 yards of it and get either myself or a client an opportunity is, man, and it's a drawn out process. We all know that, like, we have places to be and deer don't, right? They just have to survive. So to be able to play it out like that and use the wind constantly, and I mean, it's a big chess game, and there's nothing more fun than doing a spot and stalk hunt. And especially, I mean, I'm an archery guy through and through. I have nothing wrong with rifles. I own a rifle. I rifle hunt. There's nothing wrong with that. I'm not one of those guys, but if you gave me a choice, it would be archery every day.
I just can't imagine, like, the anticipation that builds from, like, whenever this starts, when you locate a deer, and you have, like, you locate deer in Michigan or in these other states through trail cameras, you know, like, you it's so hard to glass. Like, there's spots in Michigan you can glass, but you're not locating bucks like the way you guys can. So, like, I'm just thinking, if I locate a buck, it's like, yep, that's a deer I'm after. He's mature. Who cares what, you know, maybe if it's a 140, if it's a 130 gnarly old 8-point, like, whatever that is. Once you have acquired your target, and then you have days and hours invested in seeing this deer, and then you finally, that anticipation builds the closer you get, the closer you get. And then for all that to come through, like, dude, the fist pumps and the celebration you have to have with your guides or your clients has got to be just unreal. Because, like, I barely see a deer that I'm going to shoot. The amount of time I see him is like minimal. We're talking like, I'm lucky if it's minutes, you know, it's usually seconds, and it's either comes and goes,
and it's
like
drawn
that.
Out. And it's drawn out. Like, the way I explain it, and this is, I wanted to bring this up earlier, the way I explain it with, like, you know, when we're doing spot and stalk, or when you're scouting in Michigan, or any kind of anywhere, East Coast area, Midwest, further East, Midwest, but, you're doing that through a long, drawn out process. It's, you know, you're putting a lot of time in the woods, just like we are out West, trail cameras, walking trails, shed hunting, maybe in the spring, trying to figure out, I mean, everything. You're sitting on the roads, glassing, soybeans, whatever you can do. When we do it, it's all compacted into possibly like a week. I mean, we find deer. Now I go out, you know, I'll go out in August. I'm out in a tent, you know, 2 weeks, I'm home for a week, then 2 weeks, I'm home for a week. And then, you know, August or September rolls around, I got a pretty good understanding of what's on that, you know, like 13,000 acres out there, and what we want to take, and what's management, what's does, what's trophy. But there's always surprises. I didn't see it all. But at the same time, when it comes down to the hunt, that particular week is, as you guys know, when you're, every week in October is different. Every week in November is different. It's the same thing when we take clients out. Like, I can scout all I want in August. All it does is give me a body count, and what I want to pursue. When I get there, we're trying to do all the scouting in a week and hunt at the same time. And you could take it as a little harder. You could take it as maybe a little easier, because we can see far and we can locate them. I just take it as, you're doing everything that we love and throwing it into a week at the same time. And it's just, you get to scout, you get to figure out that deer, you get to learn the deer, and then you get to pursue the deer. And hopefully, you know, you don't make a silly mistake. And
yeah, the wind doesn't do something stupid, or you can play that, right? There's so many things.
Mess it up with the wind.
Yep.
The biggest thing for us is always when we locate that buck, like day one, it's always like, how do we get there? Let's go. Let's go. And it's like, oh, we might stay here 2 days watching this thing.
Yeah.
It's like, why? He's right there. I'm like, I know, but we don't know what he's going to do.
Yep.
When we go 500 yards, it's going to take us 6 hours to get there. I mean, I could run 500 yards and be, you know, dead tired, but the way we have to move to get there and not bust out deer on the way to them, it could take, I want to figure out a pattern. Is there some sort of pattern? Mule deer are a little tougher than whitetail. Whitetail kind of play the same game as what you do in Michigan. They have some sort of a pattern. They like to stick to what they know.
Mm-hmm.
Mule deer, they're wild cards. I mean, sometimes they have a pattern, and then like they'll have a pattern for 3 or 4 days. You got them, and then one day they just up and do something different, just because, you know.
Yeah, I don't want you to undersell like how hard it is. Yeah, I don't want you to undersell how hard it is to get close to deer in that kind of terrain, because when I was pheasant hunting, we would, like, you know, there's terrain. Like, it's not just always flat. There's rolling hills, and there's like these, I call them like hidden sloughs. Like, where you park the truck, you got to walk like 3 miles, and you come over this little rise, and it's like there's just a slough, just like, and slough just sometimes has water and cattails, and you like barely crest over this hill, and you're just standing there, and you're like hundreds of yards away from it, and you look, and whitetails are just running away. I'm like, what? Like, that's so far away. How did they pick me up that quick? So, like, I've always, like, just been an astonishment that you can, obviously there's tricks and, like, you've learned through experiences, but, like, yeah, you can see a long ways, but you have to get your butt within bow range of that animal, wild animal that's got way better eyesight than us, and they want to survive. Like, they don't want to die. So every time I see a success, you know, picture in the Western states or whatever, and knowing, like, a spot and stalk, it's like, I've been out there. I've drove the last time I was in North Dakota. I drove 1,000 miles there. And then in the week of hunting, I drove 1,000 miles and then 1,000 miles back. So like we covered all over North Dakota. Like I've drove all around that. And
right.
And it's, it's just, I can see the addiction to it. You know, I can see why hearing you talk about this, like knowing that, and like you said, you do your scouting and stuff, but you can't just like set a trail camera in a river bottom and be like, yep, he's going to walk by this little camera that only has a small point of view because it's so vast, you know, like well, you can't really difference. Get that intel, you know, like that, where you guys are at. So like, yeah, you really have to rely on intuition or like know what deer like to do. And I'm sure then when you start that hunt, that first morning when day breaks and you find that guy, you're just like, yeah, let's go. We got this. We're in the chips, you know, because you don't have like intel. Yeah. Like we have, like right now on my phone, you know, every 3 hours I get updates on my cameras, you know, and I have a pretty good idea what's going on multiple properties from that. You don't really have that, you know, that lifestyle out there.
I mean, I can put some stuff out. I do have trail cameras. I do, we're talking an expanded view, 13,000 acres, our West River property, you know, over 1,000 acres on our East River property. To own that many cameras, you know, I'm not, we have some sponsorships. Game cameras is not one of them, unfortunately.
Yeah. Hit them up. But if like, anyone wants a good, you know, a good area to run a lot of cameras, Corey's got the space. So
listen to this. Yeah, anyone want to help me out here?
And then right after that,
you need a run them and everything. Yeah. And
right after that, you need a battery sponsorship because geez.
No kidding. Yeah. So, but like, you know, being able to set up a camera can work in certain situations with whitetail, even mule deer. But you know, I've not found anything better than sitting on a hill and glassing for 12 hours. And then the next day going to the point where I couldn't see and glassing for 12 hours and finding them and then just watching. I mean, when I say glassing, you know, we're watching deer for a while, but it's not like sitting in a tree stand or in a blind and watching deer that come in at 200 yards. We're talking 800 yards, 1,000 yards. We're watching them. We're picking them off. We're getting a little closer the next time we go out, finding the mannerisms, trying to figure out where they're moving. And, you know, over the time that I've been out here, I kind of know where they like to be, but it's still 13,000 acres. I mean, there's still stuff that I know I haven't touched every bit of it, but definitely stuff even that I've touched that I don't have memorized about how they access. I mean, there's case in point, there's a fence I wanted to be on for a stalk just to start the stalk as long as the deer turned the right way and the wind was right. And I thought they were going to come over and hop a fence and we were going to be right in it. And like 3 weeks prior, we had broke through the gate or through a fence, like, I don't know, 800 yards to the east of where we were sitting like 2 weeks prior. And those deer came up to the fence. They were going to do exactly what I thought they were. All the grass was beaten down that they've been jumping it this entire time. And they walked up to the opening instead of jumping the fence just because the opening was now there. And it changes so fast out there. And then even having to deal with the cattle. I mean, these are cattle ranches that we got to deal with. It's our, you know, 1,200 cow-calf pairs. I've got an idea of where I want to go. And, I know what paddock they're in, but that doesn't mean that the deer are going to be like, hey, the cows are here. I can't be in this paddock either. So, and one ugly thing about cows is for some reason when you're out there, they draw interest real quick. Yes, they want to be right next to you and make noises and draw attention. And every other animal's like, hey, what's going on over there?
Yeah. Stupid cows.
There's times where we've seen, some of the biggest deer, and I'm not saying this just cause they got away, you know, the fish always get bigger when they get away, but not the biggest deer, but some of the biggest deer that we've had, where they're in the middle of a cow pasture and there's no way to get there when there's 1,200 cow calf pairs. It doesn't matter which way the wind's blowing. It doesn't matter if it's blowing 50. I mean, and that's another part of spot and stalk where, you know, we're sleeping in wall tents at our West River property, and calm days are days that I don't look forward to. In river breaks, everything swirls, your thermals are just as bad as they are in the mountains. Obviously they intensify in the mountains, but you kind of get a little lackadaisical in a river break because you don't think about the thermals as much. I've killed all my deer out here in 20 plus mile an hour winds. and it's you spend a lot of time on glass being really cold, and you find a deer, you get downwind, and I mean, you can get you. I mean, it's and you, you know, I don't want to make it sound like it's the easiest thing in the world. You can get within 20 yards of them. I mean, they will sit there and hunker. The winds in South Dakota, North Dakota, they're no joke. I mean, it's been an eye opener for me the last 5 years being out here. 50-mile-an-hour winds, 30, 40-mile-an-hour winds. And then doing it archery, you got to get 20 yards. So there's not much you can do about it. But
a pheasant can go really fast in a 30-mile-an-hour wind. I found that out. Like, holy moly.
Yeah, I think they've been clocked at like 25 miles an hour. That's without wind. And you watch them like turn sideways.
Dude, you can't lead them far.
It's not even worth wasting ammo.
No, you cannot touch them. You cannot.
They're like, what? I have clients that will be hunting in wind, and they'll be like, well, where was I? I'm like, you're behind them. Are you sure? You're across the field. How'd you see that? I'm like, I just know.
You just know it.
35 miles an hour out here. You were not far enough ahead.
No, you were not leading them enough. That's for sure. That's great. So, yeah, I mean, I'm super intrigued by like your whitetail hunts because of like what you touched on, like that wall tent kind of thing. So like if someone wants to kind of have like the adventure like hunt, you guys offer that, which is pretty cool, you know, and you get to get out of, you know, your comfort zone and kind of work your way west. I mean, that was one of the reasons why we did the bear hunt, because like we really like to go on an elk hunt someday, you know, like that was kind of like that's something I think a lot of people from like our Michigan Midwest area want to do that. But like, that's a really big financial commitment to go do that, and mountains and traveling and logistics and all that. Like where you guys are in South Dakota, you can drive that if you want. No big deal. You know, but you can also have the opportunity to fly in and do that kind of thing. But for someone who's like a Midwest guy that wants to get out there and kind of, you know, have that, you know, middle of nowhere feel, you know, kind of like you're just out there hunting, this sounds just like right up your alley, you know, doing that.
Yeah, and there's an adventure to it. Whether you're staying at the lodge here, East River, or, you know, the West River camp, it's definitely a little more adventure in the West River camp and in the wall tents and everything. But, you know, you can kind of pick and choose what you want to do. Obviously there's more mule deer West River. It's a little more rustic, but yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's within driving distance. I think to get back to Grand Rapids from where we are here, it's like 13 hours and I've got two kids. So, you could push it if you're by yourself or with your hunting partner, easy. I've got to make stops for two kids. So
dude, you can do that. No problem. I mean, that's what's awesome about that. You get to that. It's a whole different world in 13 hours from, you know, Grand Rapids, which is pretty cool. You know, that's a cool
experience. Really changes. It changes drastically. It's not like it slowly changes through Wisconsin, Minnesota. I mean, Wisconsin, Minnesota are just like Michigan. And then as soon as you get to, you know, past Sioux Falls of South Dakota, it starts changing quick to the prairie. And I mean, I love the mountains and everything, and I'd give anything to own some property out there or a cabin somewhere. We're looking in Idaho, trying to find something, but like everything the prairie offers is it's fun. Now the wind can beat you up a little bit, but I have a little gur, I guess, to get through it.
It's good stuff. Like, what'd you say? How many people are in the town you live in? Would you say 700?
700.
Yeah. So you're outnumbered by cows and pheasants for sure. You know, and wildlife.
That's just in the pasture next to us. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a different experience. So So I guess if there's any kind of other, like maybe a little tidbit that you can give from like someone who like me, let's say like maybe I'm not the best example, because I've been hunting out of state for like, you know, 10 years. So I've been to Missouri, I've been to Iowa, I've been to Illinois, Kentucky, all these states. And we try to do a hunt every year. Someone who's like maybe on the fence, that's never, you know, done a guided, you know, whitetail thing or a out of state journey. From my perspective, looking at this, I have spent quite a bit of money. Me and my dad, we've never done a full guided whitetail hunt, but we've done semi-guided. And we've always tried really hard to vet, you know, before we go, like either using social media or lots of phone calls. And we've been burned. Like, I've spent a lot of money, me and my dad, for that 5 or 6 day hunt to get to a spot where we were told no one's hunted here yet this year. And then, yep, you can hang your stands wherever you want. And then we do like a little scout around and it's like, dude, this place has been pounded. Like there's human sign everywhere. You know, you see trees that have, you know, stands in them that the people left and, you know, you got tracks and all that. And then it's just, you're hunting. It's almost worse than hunting in Michigan because it's been just blown out.
Well, and you don't know it either. That's
exactly, yeah. It's a new thing. So this kind of a hunt is super intriguing, I think, and you can probably back this up, but you're going to go to a place that's vast. That is, you know, you can't just blow it up. Like you're seeing stuff from a distance, you know, and if you do like that rut kind of hunt, you're finding new, like you said, you get surprised sometimes with bucks. And like, this is like a different kind of an experience. It's almost like if you're going to spend the money on something, give this a shot. Like there's good opportunities in the prairie, like situation where you're at to have that kind of land that you can just go and enjoy. And then you get to do the rustic side of it, like wall tent, you know, kind of thing. It's just, you know, there's a lot more things to offer with that kind of a hunt.
Yeah. I think, you know, doing a more spot and stalk, especially whitetail, obviously mule deer, that's kind of how a lot of people do it anyway, but a whitetail opportunity to do spot and stalk is it's a once in a lifetime that will keep you coming back. I mean, it's addicting. I'm not going to say do it once and you'll be satisfied. You're going to keep coming back. And that doesn't have to be guided. There's plenty of public land out here that's up for the taking as far as like how archery goes in South Dakota. It's an over the counter. And for like West River, you can either do an East River or West River. Or you can get like a state tag. So you get both, but they're any deer. So you can shoot a whitetail or you can shoot a mule deer, depending on where you're going. So it's fairly easy to figure out on the website. If anyone, you know, if anybody needed help, Game Fish and Parks, anyone can obviously reach out to me at any time. But whether you want to do guided or not, or just get intel, being able to come out and kind of scout some land. If you know a little bit about whitetail, you're going to be able to find them. Having a guide obviously helps. Guides who care. Nate, you know, touched on being burned. I've been burned before, and I'm in this industry. This is what I do full time, and I've met people and want to go out and people that need dogs, and, you know, we kind of trade a hunt here or there, and it doesn't turn out the way it's supposed to, and it happens. To be able to vet somebody is, you know, if I found out the best way to do that, I would have done it by now, because every time I hear a story like that, like Nate just said, it makes me look bad, whether directly it does or I'm just overthinking it. I put my heart and soul into this, and to hear people get burned on it, I feel like makes every phone call that I take that much harder to secure. Spend the time on the phone, ask them to be on the phone is the best way that I've found. As far as if you are looking for a guide, whether it be South Dakota, anywhere else, spend the time with them. If they want you to come hunt with them, they will spend the time with you. If they don't, and they're busy, which we are, right? It may not be, hey, right now, right? I may be scouting if you're calling me for a couple weeks and I've got zero service when I get back. Either if I haven't reached out, reach back out and we'll talk, but try to get them on the phone and talk to them. It's very hard to, unfortunately, especially with new technology, with AI stuff, I've seen some crazy stuff this year with these generated responses. Get on the phone and talk to your guide, your potential guide, and talk to other guides too. And here's a tip that I don't think anyone's going to like, but if you have a guide and you ask them about another guide or an outfitter and they dog them immediately, I can guarantee you that the one you're talking to that's dogging someone else is not the one to go with either. Yep. So there are plenty of hunters. There's plenty of clients out here for everybody. If somebody's actually done something wrong, sure. But to just go out and out of your way and dog someone for a clientele list, I think that's
yep. That's solid advice, man. And like you nailed on the head. Like I'm in construction, so every handyman who has burned a homeowner, or every horror story you read on Facebook or social media, every time you've heard, I paid all this money and it only got halfway done. The guy left. I like take that personally, you know, because that's just my, that's just the career I'm in. And it just, I just hate that that is like, you and of course you hear the bad more than you hear the good, or the bad, you know, sticks around a little longer. But yeah, like that's the last thing I want to do is to have that. And, you know, you guys, as you know, having, you know, outfitting and that kind of thing, you're providing a service for these guys. And you just want what's best for hunters. You want a good time. You want to do that. You're obviously you're making a living doing it, but if you really broke down on how much time you guys put into what you do and how much money you do make in a year, there's a lot of other things you can do to make that same money and not have to work so much, but you get the enjoyment and you get to live the life that you and your family want to live. Like you said, you got a wife and two kids and like you're living that lifestyle that, you know, that is how you wanted your family to go. And it's just a passion. And I mean, I'm looking from the outside in and having this conversation with you. It's very apparent that you're tore up with this and you love doing it. So, I mean, yeah, that's
especially now. I mean, doing the podcast now, we have clients here right now. The opener is the non-resident opener is tomorrow morning. We have our corporate group here for pheasants. I just got back from West River from grouse in our last archery deer hunt for a couple weeks. I've got guides out there still, but yeah, I mean, I live for this time of year. It is, I'm excited for it.
Got me all fired up, man. Like, what's coming? This is good stuff.
See me looking off my shoulder here. I got coyotes out here. I'm sitting on our front porch. I got coyotes running through our tree belt right now. Oh, I can hear them all, but I think just, you know, to get back to finding a guide, the last thing I want is for anyone to get, burned on something. You know, the business that I choose for sure, and not that any other business is easier, but it, you know, we're a want business. This is something that nobody has to go do. No one has to pay a guide. They don't have to pay me to do anything. And reputation is everything. And it is with every business. I'm not saying it's not, but it is something that I take personally when stuff like this happens. I love every minute of it. And if there's any way that I can help, if it's even trying to help you with public land, I don't care. I mean, my passion for the outdoors, you know, Nate, I mean, he mentioned Tony, his brother, Nick, everyone that we kind of grew up with, I think everyone knows my passion for the outdoors and how much that I love it. If it's just helping someone get successful in the outdoors, whatever that may happen, however that is, fishing, hunting, whatever it is, I'll help as much as possible. So, and finding that person is tough to do. There's a lot of people out there. There's a lot of good guides all over. But try to talk to them on the phone and vet them as best you can that way. So
plug what your place is. You know, I don't know if we've really even talked about that, like kind of give a little thing, let people know who they can reach out to, what they got to look up. And yeah, obviously in the show notes, I'll have this too, but yeah, what are you? Like, what is your name, your lodge or whatever? What is all that?
So our lodge is Grand CL Lodge, CIEL Lodge. We're in Plankinton, South Dakota, a town of 700. My dog training business is the Dog Park, PRK, spelled PRK for park. And the website and everything will be on there. We do dog training, pointers and retrievers. And then our hunting business is sharptail, prairie chickens, pheasant. I do head down south and travel guide a little bit after our season here, our wild bird season, but, we do deer hunts, whitetail and mule deer. If the spot and stalk isn't your game and you want to do more stand hunting, that's what we have kind of East River where our lodge is. And then if, you know, adding just that little extra adventure is where you think that you sit, going sleeping in a wall tent for 6 or 7 days, spot and stalk in the prairies of South Dakota, you know, maybe that's more up your alley. That's a fun time too. So, anybody wants to reach out, I'm sure my email and everything will be right on there. Anyone can contact us anytime. So
perfect. Well, let's end it on that, man. I thank you for doing this and hopping on. I have a very sneaking suspicion this is not going to be the last time that you're on Michigan Wild, because I love this kind of a conversation. This is something that I've done for years talking to people and doing this. Now I get to record it and do this thing. So I appreciate taking time and doing this. And anytime I can help someone out that's, you know, chasing their dream and doing that, like, I'm taking advantage of that. So thank you for doing this, Corey, man. And I hope everyone enjoyed this episode of Michigan Wild. And like Corey was saying, you know, just get out there, go out there, walk around. If you had a dog, or maybe you don't, just spend time outside and, you know, be open-minded. It's kind of like what he was touching on earlier. Like, maybe you're shed hunting, but look for more things. Or maybe you're just out there enjoying the creation and just see what you can learn and just try to be better. And you will not be disappointed. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Yep. Thank you.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.